Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. Let's get straight to the docket. First, should George Floyd receive a pardon for his felony conviction in Texas? Second, Andrew Brown's family speaks. One fact that people don't seem they want to talk about. Third, videos of cops roughing up a 73-year-old woman with dementia. Fourth, correctional officer sees Ghislaine Maxwell's legal papers. A guy you certainly don't want as your neighbor. Amber Geiger's attorney argue her appeal today. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button and make sure you hit that little bell so you receive notifications of when we put up new content or go live. We will go live this evening, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Please join us, and we will do our Patreon live show immediately after that. So make sure that you are a Patreon member so that you can get the magic link as well as the magic phone number so that you can call in and continue the conversation. Okay, first on the docket, should George Floyd receive a pardon for his felony conviction in Texas? Now, we all learned through the trial of Derek Chauvin that George Floyd had had some run-ins with the law. Hey, it happens, right? Well, George Floyd had a 2004 conviction in Texas for a drug case. The reason why the posthumous pardon application has been filed on behalf of George Floyd is that in this particular case, the only evidence that existed was the testimony of the officer. And the officer in that particular case, well, he's had some problems with his truth-telling ability. And the officer who's had some integrity issues is a former officer, Gerald Goines. You may recall back in 2019, he was involved in a little bit of a high-profile case known as the Harding Street Killings, in which he obtained a warrant for a no-knock raid from a municipal court judge under false pretenses. Sound familiar? Yes, it does. No-knock warrants based upon bogus information. That's a little bit of a problem with vice and narcotics-type police officers is they think the ends justify the means. Well, in that particular case, the warrant claimed a criminal informant purchased heroin from a man at the address in Southeast Houston, and that the man selling drugs was known to have a gun, among other things. This meant that there was no need for the police to knock on the door before entering. The raid left two people dead and five officers injured. Now, the Harris County District Attorney's Office agreed post-conviction relief was appropriate for some of the defendants that were arrested by Goines. Now, according to Floyd's posthumous pardon application, Goines, at that time a 35-year law enforcement veteran, was indicted on two charges of felony murder and tampering with a government record. As part of the ongoing investigation of police corruption exposed by the Harding Street killings, people looked into posthumous relief for the 2004 drug conviction that ensnared George Floyd in the criminal justice system so long ago. Prosecutors determined in 2019 that Floyd had been convicted on the lone word of Gerald Goines, a police officer we could no longer trust. That means that the district attorney's office fully supports the request of George Floyd's attorneys and his family for a pardon, and they join it, and they hope that the governor grants a new pardon. Now, pardons are very hard to come by, but when an officer who has questionable integrity was involved in a case, it jeopardizes lots of cases. It jeopardizes the integrity of any conviction. And given the fact that that police officer has a history of being involved in questionable integrity issues, I think that this would be appropriate, not only for Mr. Floyd, but really other cases that former officer Goines was involved with, and there are questions as to his integrity, which would lead to just about every case, more than likely in his 35 years. Let me know what you think. Do you agree or disagree with my opinion? Next on the docket, Andre Brown's family speaks. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with this case, things started getting going, but frankly, I wanted to wait to see if there was more information. Now, it's alleged that Andrew Brown, through his attorneys, they allege that the sheriff deputies shot the 42-year-old man in the back of the head as they were serving a warrant last week. Brown's son, who was allowed to view what the family attorney said was a 20-second snippet of body cam video, well, the son describes it as nothing more than an execution. Now, I want to be very careful with my words here. I think we all need to wait for more information. I think the police have an obligation and the courts have an obligation to make sure that the body-worn camera is released. If we don't have all the information released, it leads to speculation and it leads to people making statements that are, frankly, overly broad. Now, in this particular situation, it is alleged that Brown tried to drive away from the officers. Now, what I have seen in some of the information that was come out was that initially they said that Brown was driving away and that he was shot in the back of the head, specifically right there in the lower portion of his head and neck. My first thought was, well, why were the police shooting at a car driving away from them? Well, now there's information to say that Mr. Brown was backing into the officers, which may justify the officers shooting. Now, if the officers could get out of the way, perhaps they should get out of the way. However, a vehicle can be a deadly weapon, particularly if you're trying to get away in a high rate of speed. You can injure people. At that point, the officers, and here's my word, may have been justified in using deadly force. But until everyone releases all of the information, we won't know for sure. So, in the Brown case, let's be clear, Crime Talk has taken the position we need more information and we're not going to speculate. We want the facts so that we can get to the truth. Now, just when you think things can't get a little worse, wait. Yes, that's right. We have video of police officers roughing up a 73-year-old woman with dementia. Now, this is not a good set of facts. And what's even worse is that there's now video of the officers somewhat celebrating taking down the 73-year-old woman with dementia and literally getting excited about it, waiting for the pop, referring to the shoulder being dislocated. How did this story start? Well, it goes back to June 26th of 2020. Walmart employees noticed that a individual left the store with some a candy bar and a can of Pepsi and a t-shirt without paying. Staff at the Walmart stopped the 73-year-old Karen Gerner on the way out. Now, Ms. Gerner also suffers from sensory aphasia, which impairs her ability to communicate and understand speech. At the exit, and they took the items back from her after reportedly refusing to let her pay for the items at the store. But as she walked home, two police officers, Austin Hopp and Daria Jalali arrested Garner, who appeared visibly confused in Hop's body cam footage. Now, court documents say that the officers then violently assaulted her, twisted her arms behind her back, throwing her to the ground, and handcuffing her. Now, the Loveland Police Department, which is located here in the state of Colorado, released surveillance footage, which was released by the Ms. Garner's family's attorney, and it purportedly shows the officers laughing at the body cam footage of her arrest hours earlier. Two of the cops that were identified were Hop and Jalali. The officers made their commentary while Garner remained handcuffed to the bench in his cell just 10 feet away from them alone. During this, Hop is heard saying in apparent reference to Garner's arm coming out of its socket, "Oop, ready for the pop?" Yeah, that's right. A third unnamed officer asks, "What popped?" Hoop then replied, "I think it was her shoulder. I can't believe I threw a 73-year-old woman on the ground." Guess what, Officer Hop? Neither can we. Are you kidding me? A 73-year-old woman and you have to throw her on the ground? Two on one? Are you really cut out to be a police officer if that's what you think you need to do? Come on. Needless to say, the Loveland Police Department should probably get their checkbook ready. Ms. Garner's attorneys have filed a federal lawsuit alleging excessive force and that she suffered a fractured upper arm and dislocated shoulder, along with other injuries from the incident back in June of 2020. Now, Officer Hop has been placed on administrative leave pending the outcome of an internal investigation. Of course, you know, you have to wonder, why is the internal investigation still taking so long when it's June of 2020 when this reportedly took place? Really? How long does it take an investigation? If they were going to charge Ms. Garner, how long do you think it would have taken for that investigation to take place? Give me a break. This is why lots of people are losing trust in police departments and police officers. And I like police officers. There are a bunch of good ones out there. I'm telling you, there really are. Got to get rid of the bad ones and they got to do it swiftly. And I get it. They have a tough job and they got to deal with difficult people all day long. But if you, as a police officer, cannot find a way to deal with somebody who's not threatening you with violence or a weapon, who's 73 years old, and suffers from dementia, you may want to seek a different career. That's for sure. But it certainly shouldn't be for serving the public. Next in the docket, Ghislaine Maxwell. Certainly lots of action in her case recently. She recently pled not guilty to the superseding indictment. And now she is claiming that the correctional officers, where she is being held in custody pending trial, that they took documents away from her that were attorney-client privilege. Well, the detention center has a different story, basically stating that her attorney handed her documents during their attorney visit. She came into the visit with no documents. She left with documents, and that's against their protocol. Now, I can tell you, that's not uncommon. You usually have to get permission to give the inmate any documents while you're in custody. Otherwise, they have to go through the mail so that they can, in fact, be searched, or if they're attorney-client documents, that they're opened in front of the inmate with the sheriff present so that they can view the documents and make sure that there's no contraband. They're not going to read the documents. And in this particular case, they were trying to find the documents that were handed to Ghislaine Maxwell while she had the attorney visit. Now, of course, the attorneys say, hey, they were being monitored the whole time. Why didn't somebody say something at that time? So we'll see how that shakes out. But of course, in an overreaction, everybody's going to sue everybody. And that's just the way it is. Now, next on the docket, if this case doesn't scare the hell out of you, I do not know what will. And I'm not trying to scare you, but ladies and gentlemen, we have said this before. The world is a dangerous place. Take it from me, your local neighborhood criminal defense attorney. There are some bad people out there. Now, we got to give them due process. I get that. But take a listen to this. An Indiana man is now facing attempted murder charges after authorities found a badly beaten 9-year-old inside of his home. Now, who did this 9-year-old happen to be? His neighbor. Now, the child was reported missing by the parents shortly after 7 p.m. While questioning neighbors doing a neighborhood sweep, several of them told officers that the child's next-door neighbor, James Brian Chadwell II, said he saw the girl after she disappeared. When the officers arrived at Chadwell's house, he denied knowing the victim's whereabouts, but said that she had been by the home earlier, but had left. Now, Chadwell gave permission to the police officers to search the home. They came to a door that had a chain lock on it. They could hear a child crying. Exigent circumstances at that point, they go in and recover the girl. Now, fortunately, she is alive, but Mr. Chadwell has been charged with child molestation, attempted child molestation, battery resulting in serious bodily injury, criminal confinement, and strangulation. Prosecutors filed a sentencing enhancer charge of the suspect because he is a habitual offender, and that could add an additional 20 years to Chadwell's sentence. Needless to say, the prosecutor doesn't want Mr. Chadwell, the bad guy who will give the presumption of innocence, to ever get out of prison again. Now, ladies and gentlemen, what does somebody look like who's going to kidnap the 9-year-old girl next door? I don't know. Well, this guy does. But if you're not sure about your neighbors or you have any doubt who's in your neighborhood, I'm telling you, take a look at this commercial when we take this quick break. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, Amber Geiger. Remember her? That's right. The former police officer who went into the wrong apartment on the wrong floor of her apartment complex and shot and killed Botham Jean, a young account executive. I think he was actually an accountant or working on his CPA. A very, very tragic story. She was ultimately convicted by a jury of her peers, and the court sentenced her to a 10-year prison sentence based upon her conviction of murder. Well, her appeal was argued today. And basically, the attorneys for Ms. Geiger are arguing the judge gave some wrong instructions as it related to the reasonableness of Ms. Geiger thinking that she was in her apartment. Really, what this amounts to is a mistake of fact. Now, what we have mentioned before is if you do not raise something at the trial court level, you don't get to raise it on appeal for the first time. Very, very few circumstances. The appellate courts heard argument from Amber Geiger's attorneys today, basically saying, hey, you should have given us this mistake of fact instruction really on your own, judge. And so what does that really mean for Ms. Geiger? I don't know. If it's plain error, then Ms. Geiger may get a new trial. It could be that they could vacate the possible murder and give a criminally negligent conviction in its place. My guess is, and it's only a guess at this point because I haven't read those documents and I haven't heard all of the oral arguments, I don't think Ms. Geiger is going to get any relief. I watched that trial. It was a very clean trial. It was a question of fact whether murder had taken place or was it just a big accident. The jury unanimously found it was murder. I think Ms. Geiger will be spending the remainder of her time in prison, and she will not get any relief at the appellate courts. And hey, we'll continue to follow the case. And if I'm wrong, I'll be the first to admit I got it wrong. And finally today, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Olivia Taylor Washek apparently got a little intoxicated. And while she was intoxicated, she was asking random citizens if they would like, that's right, a lap dance. She was a little intoxicated, as I mentioned. And when the paramedics ultimately arrived, when the police were also called for, you know, the fact that she was really intoxicated, she did, in fact, threaten to assault the paramedics if they came near her. So at least we know it is not a crime to offer lap dances in Florida, but she was arrested for a disorderly intoxication, a misdemeanor. So Miss Taylor Washek, congratulations. You are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And hey, if you want to give lap dances, you can certainly do that, but you want to make sure that the willing participants are there and also that you're not so drunk and it's in the middle of public. So, Ms. Washek, congratulations. All right, please join us tonight. We have our live show at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Please join us. If you're not a Patreon member, please become one, because after we do our live show, our Patreon show begins, where you'll actually be able to call in and talk and we can discuss cases. And if you haven't done so already, please follow us on Instagram, Facebook. Now, Facebook, trying to get my numbers up there. I'm just going to be honest with you. And so if you go to our Facebook page, we're going to have a little contest. And if you basically subscribe to our Facebook page, you are going to be in a drawing for a $500 cash prize. And when we get to 10,000 subscribers, we will randomly pick a name and that lucky person will get $500 cash. So where else can you do something simple by subscribing and getting possibly cash? Go do it. Thank you. All right. Thanks for watching. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.